hard to find in the morning papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen. But it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it'll go. Talk radio.
We're back. Second hour of the National Intel Report on this Monday, the 18th of August, 08, folks. Sell now, our equities out there, dangerously overbought. Al Martin wrote recently, he said, commodity prices continue to fall back while equities, stocks, continue to rise. Why? He said there are several factors which should be mentioned in order to understand how the brand new speculative bubble in the stock market has been created. The recent rally in the equities can be tied to the bogus rally in the dollar, and it has rallied here from a low of 71 just a few weeks ago to almost 77, strengthening, you know. Yeah, strengthening a dollar that's absolutely worthless. What a magician's trick. This is then being construed as the immediate bullish factor for the equities, when in reality, it's not bullish at all. In the immediate sense, we see that the energy and commodity stock indexes have exerted downward pressure within the larger equity indexes. Is being construed as a bullish move because typically lower commodity prices mean lower cost and thus increase corporate profits. It should be remembered, however, that it took several quarters of the commodity rally to really begin to weigh in on the corporate earnings. The effects of cheaper commodity prices will not be felt in higher corporate earnings for at least another two quarters. Also, there's a sense that the Fed and the Treasury have adopted an attitude that, well, now no one will be allowed to fail. Everybody will be bailed out, and that the government can pass endless housing initiatives to prevent further foreclosures and provide cheaper money, when in fact all the legislation passed in the last 90 days to supposedly help prevent a further debacle in housing is going to have very little effect and impact, because its effects on percentage basis, it affects very few homeowners. In addition to U.S. Treasury, Hank Paulson admits, it would take at least 12 months for any of these government-sponsored initiatives to have any real impact. Well, Mr. Paulson admitted how workable these various foreclosure prevention plans are is really not known, because it would involve the creation of a whole new government bureaucracy, which would have to break down mortgage pools and track down individual homeowners. And how are you going to do that? Well, who's got the records? Because somebody buys a mortgage, and then they promptly sell it off to somebody else. Somebody in Bangladesh might own your mortgage. Another factor is the growing bullish shillism, as he puts it on the street, that subprime problem is over. That we've seen the bulk of the subprime write-offs, and there's probably only another $300 billion left to go. Now, what's being swept under the carpet is the trillion-dollar loss still ahead in the home equity credit lines of credit itself, auto finance paper, and credit card debt. Now, notice I said $1 trillion left in the housing market alone. And again, as we alluded in last hour with G. Edward Griffin, this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, we've been telling people, and some people have panicked here. Oh, my God, gold's down to $7.99, or it's $8.5, and oh, I bought a... Nobody panic out there, because the real chickens have not come home to roost, and they ain't laying eggs, trust me. Nobody panic on this deal. You're holding gold right now? Do not panic. And there is, and I'm sure Mr. Noel will get into this in his own program coming up here in just 55 minutes, that there's a lot of people pulling their wares off of the shelf in anticipation it might drop a little further, so why take a hit? If you own a commodity at a dollar, why are you going to sell it at 75 cents when you paid 90 cents for it? Now, that will be short-lived. We'll take the break. We'll be right back. And we'll also take your calls into this hour, 800-313-9443. The driving force behind the New World Order, folks, is their funny money system. I've said it for years.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIC card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770 because personal information should stay personal.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Other things happening also. Folks, all the people that have bought storable foods in the last couple of years. And if you buy the right food, this stuff stores for years and years and years. I've become quite adept at storing foods that, well, I'll probably not getting around. Hopefully I'll live for many more years to come, which probably wouldn't have spoiled in my lifetime. You know, but that itself is a great hedge against inflation. Imagine if you bought wheat a couple of years ago, or you bought anything a couple of years ago, for that matter. You know, so I'm not going to get rid of something that I definitely bought, and I could not go out today and duplicate it that price. So you folks out there with whatever you consider to be a commodity, bullets, beans, bullion, any of that, you know, I talked to Robbie. He called me last night, and he was talking about, there might be a panic out there. Well, I'm not panicking because I know the scenario and I know the long term scenario. I don't give a hoot and a holler if they drove the price of gold down to $700. The only thing I have to say to that, it's a good day to buy, because as I said, the chickens haven't come home to really roost yet. And when the subprime, which they're now predicting, we might see the bottom of this next year, well, you might see the bottoming out of the housing, and that'll continue to erode somewhat. But what is really in the panic of yet to come, which has the capacity, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not pushing any emotional buttons here, but it's a plain fact that we could possibly go into a deep, deep worldwide depression, not recession, depression. Because when all of this toxic sludge that they have floated out there, I mean, around the world, I mean, what a perfect opportunity for the bankster gangsters to come in and say, okay, we've got a problem here. You know, maybe we'll give you a new currency. But first, we've got to make an adjustment. If you've got $1,000 in the bank, well, we're going to revalue the money. We've got to get everything under control. Okay, your 1,000 is now worth 100. But don't worry, it's 100% guaranteed and solid. It'll quiet everybody down, and we can fire up the engines of the economies worldwide once again. So you can go right back into the same matrix of producing the wealth for the people that create this out of absolutely nothing. The Federal Reserve System, after 50 years, these hearings, by the way, went on, and these are the hearings before the Subcommittee on Domestic Finance of the Banking Committee on Banking and Currency, House of Representatives, in the 88th Congress, 1964, the year after Kennedy was whacked. And my contention was he started up a parallel currency that the bankers couldn't have. Yeah. He didn't want to go to, he wanted to pull the advisors out of Vietnam? Yeah. He wanted to take the OSS, oh, I'm sorry, it was renamed to the CIA. He wanted to scatter them to the four winds? Yeah. What else did Kennedy do? Oh, well, we had that little botched thing down in Cuba. Yeah. He averted a nuclear war. Well, actually, he called the bluff of the Soviet Union. They just wanted to install a few missiles 90 miles to our south, which I understand a hurricane is rolling through right now. We're building into a hurricane. You people down in Florida, nail everything down, grab the babies. But the real thing that got Kennedy killed was he put a parallel and competing currency into circulation. Back in 1963, $5 billion worth. Ordered the Treasury to do it and loan it out at zero interest. Now, any way you look at this, these bankers don't like competition. It's a good old boys club. You got to be a severe ring knocker to be the initiate inside those circles. These are the controllers, the manipulators, the dreamers, if you will, that are dreaming up the plan for the great new world order. Well, Wright Patman, he was the chairman of this Banking and Currency Committee, and they introduced this with a statement by Dr. Russell Lee Nornburn out of Asheville, North Carolina. That's why I asked Ed about it, and he was familiar. He says, "Gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to make a comparison of this legal tender currency issued by the Treasury under the supervision of Congress and the Federal Reserve note currency issued by that regulatory agency. It is my purpose also to bring for your consideration a proven plan which, implemented by Congress, would bring under control the monetization of debts, government deficit spending, and inflation and financing. Supporting facts based on the highest authority will be as brief as the importance of the subject permits. Legal tender has been used as far back as we have history of a medium of exchange. In our research, Alexander Delmar, History of Monetary Systems, it was a book, states that within the Roman Empire, there was no individual coinage. Within prudent limits, it made no difference whether the coins were pure or impure, light or heavy, yellow or brown. No one could lawfully stamp them except the state." End quote. The record shows that for a period of nearly 900 years, the empire had more or less stable legal tender medium of exchange than the Federal Reserve has provided the United States during the past 50 years. Private coinage began in Europe during the 16th and 17th centuries with a gold standard, silver standard, and double standard. Delmar is the authority for stating that, "So as long as money was governed by law, it was the whole number of coins reduced to one denomination that determined prices. When money ceased to be governed by law, as was the case after the legislation procured by the Dutch and English East India Companies, it was the whole quantity of metal that determined prices. Now, the fundamental cause of the American Revolution was the conservative policies of the privately owned and controlled Bank of England in failing to supply the colonies with money, and because of their monopolistic system of financial exploitation of the British government. Practical Benjamin Franklin pioneered and printed legal tender, the currency for the colonies. Among the reasons for this continental currency not being worth a continental was the ease which it could be counterfeited. It was struck off on commercial paper of non-uniform size. The British Army used the counterfeit money as a weapon and flooded the country with currency. The economic chaos it produced nearly caused General Washington to lose the war. It may have been the reason he finally approved Hamilton's plan of placing the issue of money for the new government under the control of vested interests like the Bank of England and other established European banks of that day. It might be said, in passing, that after the Revolutionary War, the new government paid the continental issue at par, not to the soldiers who had received it as pay, however, but mainly to speculators. Washington was worn out by the war. Authorities state that he wanted peace and considered the first U.S. bank only as an expediency, and its 20-year charter a time during which the monetary system, in keeping with Republican form of government, could be implemented. Washington, of course, could not foresee that while winning the revolution, the people lost their hard-won economic freedom, which is just as basic as freedom of speech, religion, or any other freedom. The unfortunate experience of the continental currency was used by special interest and international bankers as propaganda against the United States, using its legal tender as a medium of exchange. Thus, the newly formed government lost the control of its hard-earned economic freedom to predatory financiers. This is exactly what was done when the French money was destroyed at the time of the French Revolution. Counterfeit money was printed in England and was injected into the French monetary system. It has been reliably stated that 17 printing presses and 400 men were employed in England at the time to manufacture and carry on the traffic in this counterfeit money. By this means, the French Revolutionary government's money was destroyed. Later, the private bankers and financiers regained control of the new money system and acquired possession of most of property of France. Now, on the return of Thomas Jefferson from his office as ambassador to France to become Secretary of State, he found the first U.S. bank an established fact. He was bitterly disappointed and opposed the bank as being unconstitutional, saying that it was expediency and not a paramount necessity. Later, Jefferson used stronger language and denounced the institution as one of the most deadly hostilities existing against the principles and form of our Constitution. Now, some have said that Jefferson did not favor a strong central bank. What he did not favor was the delivery of our monetary system into private hands to be run for private profit, as he had witnessed in England and in France. He was in favor of the U.S. legal tender note and that currency, and died protesting the evils of our banking system. His purpose was, instead of an aristocracy of wealth, to make an opening for an aristocracy of virtue and talent. Andrew Jackson, too, saw the advantages of the government having full control of the issue of legal tender note currency. He said, "If Congress has the right under the Constitution to issue paper money, it was given to them to be used by themselves, not to be delegated to individuals or corporations." Jackson's veto message for renewal of the second U.S. bank is a classic. The real U.S. bank that Jackson himself wanted was not established, and a long period of disaster followed. It is not within the scope of this paper to follow all the vicissitudes of our country's banking system. It is, however, necessary to relate in somewhat more detail the circumstances surrounding Lincoln's issuance of the U.S. legal tender notes. I'll continue with this. This is history, folks. This is what, the politicians in Washington, this is all a matter of record. They can read it for themselves. Why are they not learning from history past, only to repeat the mistakes of the future.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Here's a startling fact. The New World Order wants you dead. Chemicals and toxins are in the air. Biowarfare, drugs and unknown substances. Foods with no vitamins. Fast food for obesity. Fluoride in our water. How do we fight back? What do we do? Make a life change decision. Get ahead of the curve. GetTheT.com. That's GetTheT.com. Cleanse your body and internal organs. Lose weight and receive more energy. Get aboard the Life Change boat and say no to the dark side. All natural, and for about a dollar a day, you can win the race. GetTheT.com or call our friendly operators, 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Don't be deceived by the bullies of the trade.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIC card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770 because personal information should stay personal.
Wasn't that the idea when we started out in school? That's what they said the Constitution was about. Wasn't that the idea when we started out at school? That's what they said the Constitution was about.
No tyranny.
Wasn't that the idea?
No funny money.
When we started out.
No crooked politicians.
Ooh,
my goodness. In 1858, there were listed 5,400 separate descriptions of counterfeit notes. In 1862, there were about 1,600 banks chartered in the 29 states, together issuing 7,000 different kinds of banknotes of varying value. Payment in gold has been stopped by all banks. Bankers were demanding 28% interest for money loaned to the government. Into this confused atmosphere, and in order to finance the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, with the approval of Congress, ordered the Treasury to issue inconvertible U.S. notes to be used as legal tender. Lincoln's foresight at this critical period of our history not only enabled him to finance the war, but also showed the way to free mankind from economic slavery. When issued, this currency was accepted at face value as a medium of exchange. It gave a boost to the economy, and some historians, and they themselves, believe it enabled Lincoln to save the Union. Now, keep in mind, folks, that I've said this many times. Was this Lincoln's design to consolidate federal power? Now, that was done after his death in the Reconstruction Acts. Woodrow Wilson, referring to this point in history, he stated that, and under this guy's tutelage, and Edward Mandel House, by the way, we got the Federal Reserve. Old Woody Wilson said money was once more easy to get and could be used at its face value as well as gold itself to pay the mortgages off, which the older times of stress had piled up. The greenbacks of the government became for the agricultural regions of the North and West a symbol of prosperity. Now, it may be added that when the farmers are prosperous, others in the main are prosperous as well. I want to go back, if I can grab this thing. Actually, I can't lay my hands on it this moment. Maybe I'll do it during the next break. When special interests in control of the banks and the gold found that the Treasury was encroaching on their own profitable monetary system, they used their great wealth and propaganda, the gimmick of gold, to sabotage the new currency by prevailing upon those in charge to put crippling wording upon the notes and by persuading the people to refuse to accept it. We see today that the crucial issue of the determination of special interest to continue to usurp the prerogatives of state and regain control of the nation's money. The man who led and won this fight for the bankers was Salmon P. Chase, Lincoln's Secretary of the Treasury. Chase was a lawyer like Hamilton and worked hand in glove with the financial interest. In 1863, he succeeded in establishing the national banking system, returning the privilege of the issue and control of the currency to private hands. The National Bank Act, which may have been drawn up by the British Banking Association, became law by act of the Servile Congress over President Lincoln's strong protest. Lincoln's primary interest at the time, however, was to save the Union, and he could not at the same time fight the Confederacy, the international bankers, and the financiers like Jay Gould, who owned the gold and controlled the banks. Due to all this, to the fortunes of war which threatened the government itself, the value of the U.S. legal tender notes bearing the words legal tender, except for duties on imports and interest on the public debt, which had to be paid in gold, depreciated to a value of 35 cents on the dollar when Lee invaded the North. These notes were not the only notes that fell. Most private banker notes of the time became worthless and were never redeemed. By 1869, the Supreme Court declared the issue of the legal tender currency by the government unconstitutional, but only by a single vote. Changes in the court's personnel occurred almost immediately, and in 1870, the decision was reversed. Despite this, the owners of the National Bank retained their control of the issue of the people's money. Money remained scarce and times hard. In 1874, a small group of patriotic and far-seeing men attempting a real reform of our monetary system, unable to interest existing political parties, they formed a new party, the American Independent National Party. This party advocated increasing the volume of Lincoln's U.S. notes, and with these paying all government bonds not expressly payable in gold coin. The new party also advocated the suppression of all new issues of currency by private banks. In 1878, after fusing with certain labor parties, the name was changed to the Greenback Labor Party. This symbol was chosen because the U.S. notes were printed with green ink, so they might be readily distinguished from the yellow-colored gold certificates. In that year, its members cast more than a million votes and elected 14 congressmen. Alarmed at the threat to their privileged position, the bankers rallied to the fight. Such misrepresentation of facts, vilification, and ridicule has probably never before nor since been used in American politics. I wouldn't bet on that. These attacks aroused old superstitions and new fears in the minds of men who had since childhood been taught that gold coin was the only real money, who could, between panics, take paper money to the bank and exchange it for gold. I'll continue this after the break. Hold on here.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIC card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770 because personal information should stay personal.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
I'm not taking any calls. I think that sworn testimony with somebody that has given evidence to Congress and the facts laid out is probably more important right now than calls. At any rate, the parties following decreased, and soon after 1884, the election had passed out of existence. The next year, Congress firmly reestablished the government's promise to redeem the U.S. notes, whereupon they went to par and the speculators who had bought up the currency made their enormous profit. $346 million of these greenbacks are still in circulation. The soundest money on earth because they are as sound as our government. In over 2,500 years, there is no official record of legal tender currency having caused inflation where a responsible, strong government was in full control of the issue of all of its money. Now, the country was on a rigid gold standard when it ran head-on into the severe panics of 1893 and 1907. And let me interject here. The panic of 1907 was propagated by whom? Oh, that's right, J.P. Morgan and friends. In the panic of 1907, banks were unable to supply the money. The people with money, many industries, banks, and large companies printed small slips of paper. These tokens, which were accepted by workmen and merchants as money in the exchange of goods and services. The nation's discontent with the defects of the privately owned and controlled national banking system caused Congress to talk of monetary reform. Senator Norris and other men of vision felt that the government should issue and handle its own currency and wished to establish a true U.S. bank, which would be owned and controlled entirely by the government. Their views were cried down, and a powerful machine-picked senator committee appointed. The Aldrich Commission, after months abroad visiting European banks, reported in favor of what amounts to a privately controlled system. And remember, Aldrich was in on the scam of the 1913 switchover, folks, spelled out in The Creature from Jekyll Island. Eminently satisfactory to creditor interest, the new system. The prototype of the Reichsbank was approved by Congress December 23, 1913. It was named the Federal Reserve Act. The word reserve indicated its 40% gold requirement, which was claimed to be its very cornerstone. Now, the Federal Reserve was a banker's bank, despite some double talk as to who was to own the stock. It was provided that member banks had its refusal. They took all and still today own 100% of it. When I say member banks, I mean bankers and those they represent. It is not as impersonal as it sounds. The provisions that the governors of the Federal Reserve should be appointed by the president with advice and consent of the Senate was not consistent with the Constitution, which, in listing the duties of Congress, Section 8 include the words to coin money, regulate the value thereof. In fact, any participation by congressmen was expressly forbidden by the act. The small handbook printed by the Federal Reserve sounds fair enough, but gives no idea of what is involved. The Federal Reserve, have the benefits accrued to the general public, or have they accrued to the bankers and those they represent? In 1914, the per capita debt was about $12. And in 1963, around $1,600. Although population had more than doubled, there have been more business failures made during the past few years than since the early 30s, and there are relatively fewer home free of debt than 50 years ago. And remember this report, 1964. We cannot gloss over the fact that under present economic conditions, more hospital beds are filled with mental cases than all other ailments, and that doctors' offices are swamped with emotional and nervous wrecks. In my work as a physician, I have often traced illnesses to tensions due to economic strain. This is true of many of our most gifted and cultured citizens, as well as others in this land of abundance, skyrocketing debts and crime increasing five times as fast as population are largely due to the evils of our monetary system. Who was the other doctor just recently that said the same damn thing? Dr. Ron Paul. Coincidence? I think not. The individual who buys government bonds does so with hard-earned dollars saved after taxes. Does this individual get the same value and protection that the banks receive? Of course he does not. If he holds his E-bonds until maturity, his investment increases by one-third. In most cases, inflation more than wipes out the increase, as well as much of the value of the invested dollars. If he uses the bond as collateral, he must pay the bank more interest than his accruing on the bond. To banks, however, the bonds gravitate as naturally as water flows downhill. The Conference on Economic Progress explains it this way. Further, the Treasury had to borrow about $200 billion during the war, of which only about $50 billion were loaned to the government by individuals. The balance was loaned mostly by banks, which acquired these holdings virtually without cost to their stockholders. The banks were paid for these bond holdings merely by setting up their books credits to the Treasury. And again, Dr. Dean Russell of the Foundation for Economic Education, Incorporated, in his monograph on money, banking, debt, and inflation, How the Federal Reserve System Works, page 16 and 17, describe in detail the bewildering manipulations used by the banks in obtaining ownership of government bonds and fully justifies his conclusion, which is as follows. Thus, the $6 billion worth of still unsold bonds were absorbed as planned by the commercial banks, which, in effect, had been given the money by the Fed to buy them. No matter how acquired, The interest the government pays on these bonds is but a trifle compared to the profit from the manipulation of government and other credit. From less than one-fifth in 1939, government securities have become more than two-thirds of the earnings assets of the banks by 1944. In 1940, cash dividends declared by member banks of the Federal Reserve was $210,500,000,000 and $832 million by 1962. My inquiry as to whether new capital invested in the banks warranted this increase was answered by the spokesman of the Board of Governors of the system as follows. Average total capital amounts of member banks were $5,597,000,000 in 1940 and $19,066,000,000 in 1962. The ratio of dividends declared to total capital amounts was 3.8% in 1940 and 4.4% in 1962. Although many other factors were important, retained earnings of member banks totaled $11,366,000,000. Now, over this period, and accounted for most of the increase in total capital accounts. Now, the $11,366,000,000 additional capital accrued between 1940 and 1962 represents earnings above published dividends paid out by these banks during that period. Was not the actual interest received on the investment in 1962 10.8%? This example shows that the Federal Reserve System has grown into such a Frankenstein that the average citizen is misled by their financial reports as well as their manipulation of government credit, and that any government supervision is of little value. Congressional Record, Appendix 11, 1961, pages A6293 to A6296, shows facts to prove that the annual federal subsidies to commercial banks amount to over $5 billion. Now, remember one thing, folks. Remember that figure of $5 billion? What did John F. Kennedy, by executive order, do in 1963? What did he do? He ordered the Treasury to print almost $5 billion in U.S. notes, non-interest-bearing notes, the competition to the Fed Reserve. The truth is that not practical for the government to support each type of business and all individuals, just as it does the Federal Reserve System and the financiers. Our progress has been due to developing a part of our great inheritance of natural resources during a favorable period of history by many divisions of our economy and not to vested interests controlling the money created by the bankers. Our progress has indeed been great, but it is sobering, indeed a darkening thought, to remember that it is not paid for, that we owe over $1 trillion, and that this amount continues to increase as a snowball does when rolled along. And remember, again, 1964. The result of 50 years shows that our present monetary system is merely a finesse, for perpetrating financiers dedicated to maintaining the status quo instead of the public good. Their use of gold, Federal Reserve notes, and the bank credit has resulted in exploitation of the government and the people and enslavement of these in astronomical debts. This is the true state of the union. No, the Federal Reserve has not worked to the benefit of the nation as a whole. It did not prevent the Great Depression of the 30s, nor will it prevent another greater, and this time perhaps a fatal one. We have done some patchwork, but the fundamental causes of the Great Depressions has not been solved. The inherent fallacy of the system will inevitably bring the day of reckoning. There is already the feel of the late 20s in the air. And again, this is 1964. Let us compare a U.S. note with a Federal Reserve note. Ah, he talks about the U.S. note. Both were paid me for my services. These notes are identical except that at the very top, the words United States note, has one note been replaced with the words Federal Reserve note, and the seal of the Federal Reserve Bank has been added to the Treasury seal. Both notes made legal tender by government decree, and both are obligations of the United States. Neither, by the way, can be exchanged for gold. The difference of these two notes lies in the fact that the U.S. note was issued by the Treasury and entered direct into circulation as a medium of exchange for goods and services. The Federal Reserve note was issued by officials of the Federal Reserve Bank upon authority delegated to them by Congress and enter circulation under the cloud of their monetary system. This authority has opened the door of the Treasury to special interest and their manipulation of bank credit and interest-bearing government bonds. The bank and bankers are already receiving interest on their promissory notes. That is enough. The nation should not continue to favor this group by continuing to supply them with money on unequal terms, nor should it continue a practice which, in exchange for bookkeeping, transfers them enormous wealth in the form of interest-bearing government bonds. Government decree makes 30-odd billion of these Federal Reserve notes legal tender money. Now let us examine the U.S. note. Though only a handful compared to the other 346 million in these U.S. notes are still in circulation, they were issued by Lincoln and have been used to pay for goods and services from that day to this. In the past 100 years, these notes have not cost the government 1 cent of interest or added $1 to the public debt. 30 years ago, Congressman William Lemke, in speaking of these Civil War notes, said, "Of all the money, these notes have rendered the greatest service to the American people. They helped to win the Civil War. They have saved the nation more than $12 billion in interest since issued. These notes are the best currency in the world, despite what we may have been told. You and I know they have no gold backing and need none. They are backed by the seal and the might of all the wealth at the disposal of the U.S. government. They are declared by it to be full legal tender for all debts public and private. They are accompanied by the government's promise to redeem them by accepting them as taxes, which in the last analysis is the only way any government can pay its notes." I disagree with that. We used to run a country entirely on tariffs. Some taxation, but basically taxes on stuff coming in. Now, the official record shows that in our own day, at the time of the great state of stress, he says, Congress acknowledged this was true and turned to the U.S. note as our basic medium of exchange and the one way, except by repudiation, of bringing debts under control. In the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, the U.S. Government Printing Office, Washington, in the writings on page 150 and 151, under extract, is found the following, Title III, Financing, and exercising power conferred by Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution to coin money and to regulate the value thereof. On May 12, 1933, Congress authorized the President to issue $3 billion of these U.S. notes and stated that they were to be the same notes as the approved by Congress on February 25, 1862. The President was persuaded by the financiers not to do this, assuming that they were able to supply the money. If at that time Congress had asserted the authority given to it by the Constitution and had done it in plain duty, members of Congress would have seen to it that the $3 billion of this sound legal tender notes were issued and used. Instead of authorizing more interest-bearing bonds, the public debt and inflation would be much less today. Increasing the interest-bearing public debt is like fighting fire with gasoline. Keeping currency scarce forces the people to pay interest for bank credit. Bank credit now has increased to over $300 billion. Thus, there is 10 times as much bank credit as there is currency to pay for it. Remember the fractionalized reserve banking. Remember the deal that they run by. Folks, you walk into a bank, make a $100 deposit. What's the bank do? It can loan out $1,000. There's your 10-to-1 ratio. Today, bank credit comes into existence every time the bank lends and disappears every time the loan is repaid to the bank. When thrifty people borrow from the bank for the production of goods and then repay their loans, the money, or bank credit, disappears, leaving the consumer empty-handed. In bad times, when the banks will not lend, and when those who have deposits will not invest, there is no money in which to pay. This is what makes prosperity so dangerous. It destroys money just when it's most needed. Automation and unemployment will compound the danger. Less bank credit and more U.S. legal tender currency is the answer for the foreseeable future. Now, these non-interest-bearing U.S. notes, then, legal tender currency based on the economic freedom won by the American Revolution, are the best medium of exchange to move the goods produced by industry and the farms into the hands of the consumer. I'll finish this up on the other side. This is history, folks. You know, the United States notes was still, well, it wasn't still backed by gold or silver.
Being fulfilled.
But it was loaned at zero interest. Isn't that fascinating that $5 billion in 62 was about what Kennedy printed in 1963?
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIC card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold's Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770, because personal information should stay personal.
Hi, this is Tommy John. I may not be pitching for the major leagues anymore, but that doesn't mean I don't like to stay active. But like you, I get those pesky joint pains that come with age. So I take GoFlex. GoFlex is the 1-2 punch to knock out pain. It has an FDA-approved cream to quickly relieve joint pain and a doctor-approved vitamin that will guard your mobility and flexibility. So if you're suffering from pains associated with arthritis or the aches that come with age, GoFlex will help you. I know firsthand what pain is like. Years ago, they did a surgery on my arm so famous that they named it after me, the Tommy John surgery. Today, I don't let joint pain slow me down, and neither should you. If you're suffering from minor aches and pains, even the kind associated with arthritis, try GoFlex, risk-free. Thanks to GoFlex, even at my age, I can still throw batting practice.
To order GoFlex risk-free, dial 800-362-5848. That's 800-362-5848. 800-362-5848.
This timed out well. We're almost through this. It was the note Thomas Jefferson had in mind 170 years ago when he said that if the people were able to regain control of their money and issue legal tender notes, the government would never incur a public debt. All other currencies should be gradually retired in a U.S. note, and this note only should be made the basis of our monetary system. The principle of such currency is so simple that a child can understand it. That it is the government's duty to furnish to all people on equal terms a medium of exchange in sufficient quantity to meet their needs. the present-day issue of U.S. notes would be as follows. The government, needing goods or services, or to pay its obligations, issues its bonds in the form of small non-interest-bearing notes and declare these legal tender. The U.S. notes should be paid directly by the Treasury, or as checks are most often used, send a check and credit the receiver's account. As the note is full legal tender money, the receiver may spend it in the nearest store, pay for services, invest it, save it, or lend it at interest. The note travels from hand to hand, satisfying exchanges and debt. That is the history of the note I hold in my hand. And he had a United States note in his hand, by the way. The time for redemption is immaterial, for it bears no interest. I or another will finally present it to the U.S. Treasury as payment for taxes. The government accepts it, thus satisfying the debt it made during the Civil War. The cycle is complete. This little bond has not cost 1 cent of interest. It may be retired or may be reissued. The agency for handling legal tender currency and notes should be a Department of the Treasury under control of Congress. It should be composed of well-qualified and reliable men. Payments for services and goods for the government and payment for the government's other obligations should be made direct to the Treasury, or direct by the Treasury, I should say. The Treasury, too, may take under direction of the President, where authorized by Congress, long-term loans at low interest to distressed areas. All large operations should be handled by credit and debit on books at present. Circulating notes should be kept at safe levels by the use of computers, but the supply should be great enough so that the interest-bearing bank credit is not forced upon the economy to the extent it is today. For general circulation, the money might be loaned to banks at the proper interest, so the banks in turn might lend it to its customers. Soon the Treasury should establish a school somewhat similar to West Point, where personnel could be trained. These men, with the integrity of the postal employees of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, could advise the administer the situation or the system. They could also work out a method of foreign trade balances much superior to the present one. Japan, which has no gold, carries an extensive foreign trade. As an example, the working of the system, the Secretary of Treasury has now asked Congress to raise the federal debt ceiling from $315 to $324 billion. Sounds good in today's terms, doesn't it? This money will not pay this year's interest on the public debt. Instead of Congress authorizing the issuing of $9 billion in additional interest-bearing bonds at 4%, Congress should authorize the issue of $9 billion legal tender notes bearing no interest. It cannot be said that this is irresponsible and inflationary financing, which non-convertible U.S. notes, we are going to increase credit this much anyway. This would have $360 million interest during the current year and many, many billions in years ahead. There's a little history, folks, from the Subcommittee on Domestic Finance, Committee on Banking and Currency, in the House of Representatives, the 88th Congress in 1964. Now it's only $10.5 trillion. We're going to be on the hook for how many trillions of dollars in bad stuff, hedge funds, SIVs, CDOs, and everything else. You walk into your bank as a creditor, you walk out a debtor, and now you're going to be the taxpayer and the surety note for their shenanigans. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
Hello, my name is Jeff.